Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's call. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would now like to turn the call over to John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Kelly. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I will spell that. It is NESDIS.PA@NOAA.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have that link, I will spell it for you so you can follow along with the presentation. That link is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BREFINGS. And again, that link is also included in the media advisory. With that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Karen Gleason, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the March 2022 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Joe Casola, NOAA's Western Regional Climate Services Director, who will provide a review of the long-term Western U.S. drought, which now affects nearly 90% of the region. And our third presenter is Scott Handel, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of May, June, and July. Our first speaker will be Karen from NOAA. Karen?
Thanks, John, and thanks to everyone for attending today's briefing. Let's turn our attention to slide number two and the global temperature record for March of 2022. The March global surface temperature departure was the fifth highest value for March in the 143-year record at 0.95 degrees Celsius or 1.71 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Looking at the temperature departure map on the left-hand side of the slide, the month of March was characterized by warmer than average conditions across much of Australia, southern and eastern Asia, parts of Central America and northern South America, Central Africa, as well as portions of the Atlantic, Indian, and northern and western Pacific Oceans. Looking at the percentiles map on the right-hand side of the slide, record warm March temperatures were observed across portions of southern Asia and parts of the western Pacific Ocean, as well as portions of the central and northern Atlantic Ocean. Overall, the record warm March temperatures encompassed about 5.5% of the world's surface area, and this ranks as the sixth highest percentage for record high March temperatures on record. Meanwhile, we see near to cooler than average March temperatures present across parts of Central North America, Southern South America, Southeastern Europe, the Northern Middle East, Western and Central Russia, as well as parts of the Northern Atlantic, and the Central and Eastern Tropical and Southeastern Pacific Oceans. However, no land or ocean areas had record cold temperatures during the month of March. Regionally speaking, we saw Asia as a whole had a March temperature that was nearly 5 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this ranked as the ninth warmest March on record. Oceania had its fourth warmest March, while Australia had its fifth warmest. I also wanted to note that unusually warm temperatures affected parts of Antarctica during mid-March, with temperatures at least 40 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than average. And according to some media reports, several locations set new March temperature records on March 18th, and of note was the Concordia station that had a temperature of 10 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 70 degrees Fahrenheit above average. Also, the Casey Research Station in Antarctica reported a maximum temperature of about 42 degrees Fahrenheit on March 16th, and that is the highest March temperature reported since records began for this station in 1989. Turning our attention now to slide number 3, and our year-to-date January to March global temperatures, we see that during the first 3 months of the year in the map on the left-hand side, much warmer than average conditions were observed across Central America, South America, Europe, Asia, and across parts of the Atlantic, Indian, and Northern and Western Pacific Oceans. Meanwhile, near to cooler than average conditions were present across parts of North America, the Northern Atlantic Ocean, Northern Africa, Central and Eastern Tropical Pacific, as well as the Southeastern Pacific Ocean. Regionally speaking, the Caribbean had its fourth warmest year-to-date period, Asia fifth warmest, and South America, Europe, and Oceania each had a January to March temperature that ranked among the nine warmest such periods on record. The graph on the right compares the year-to-date temperature anomalies for 2022, which is denoted by the black line, to what were ultimately the 10 warmest years on record. And overall, we see the January to March global surface temperature was 0.88 degrees Celsius, or 1.58 degrees Fahrenheit above average. This translates to the fifth highest January to March temperature in the 143-year record. The five warmest January to March periods have occurred since 2016. And according to NCEI statistical analysis, as shown in the bottom center part of the slide, 2022 is very likely to rank among the 10 warmest years on record and has nearly a 40% chance to rank among the five warmest years on record by year's end. Moving on to slide number 4 and zooming in a little closer to home, we see that for the contiguous U.S. during March, the average temperature was 44.1 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2.6 degrees Fahrenheit above average. On a whole, this is an above average temperature month. Looking at the percentiles map on the left-hand side of the slide, we see that above-average temperatures occurred across much of the West, as well as from the Midwest to the East Coast. We did see some below-average temperatures observed in pockets along the Western Gulf Coast, but by and large, near-average temperatures occurred across much of the middle third of the contiguous U.S. For precipitation, the average March value was 2.26 inches, which is a quarter of an inch below average. And overall, that equates to a below average month. We see in the precipitation percentiles map on the right-hand side of the slide that above average precipitation occurred from the Central Plains to the Great Lakes, as well as along the Gulf Coast states. And we saw drier than average conditions observed across much of the West, as well as the Northern and Southern Plains, and from the Tennessee Valley to the Mid-Atlantic, as well as parts of the Northeast. Michigan ranked 8th wettest for March, and North Dakota ranked 7th driest. Looking now at slide number 5, and that's our year-to-date temperature and precipitation statistics for January to March, we see the average temperature for this period was 36.3 degrees Fahrenheit, or 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average, which on a whole ends up being near average. Looking at the temperature percentiles map on the left-hand side, we see above average temperatures across much of the West, as well as along the East Coast. California had its sixth warmest January to March on record. And then we saw below average temperatures across parts of the upper Mississippi Valley, as well as across portions of the Deep South. Precipitation averaged across this three-month period was 5.66 inches, which was 1.3 inches below average. This translates to the seventh driest January to March on record. And looking at the precipitation percentiles map on the left, We see an area of above average precipitation from the Mid-Mississippi Valley to the Great Lakes, but by and large, the western half of the contiguous U.S. saw below average to record dry precipitation, including much of the west, the northern plains, the deep south, as well as parts of the southeast and mid-Atlantic states. California and Nevada each had their driest January to March on record, and South Dakota its second driest January to March on record. Turning our attention now to slide number 6, we see the most recent update to the U.S. drought monitor that was released this morning, and we see that approximately 55% of the contiguous U.S. is currently experiencing drought conditions. This is down about 5.5 percentage points from mid-March, when the contiguous U.S. saw a drought footprint that reached about approximately 61% of the contiguous U.S. This was the largest observed extent of drought that we've seen since the fall of 2012. In addition, and according to the U.S. Drought Monitor statistics, 40% or more of the contiguous U.S. has been in moderate drought or worse for approximately 82 weeks now, and this is a record in the 22-year U.S. Drought Monitor history, with the previous record at 68 consecutive weeks from June of 2012 to October of 2013. Since mid-March, we have seen improvements in drought that can be seen across portions of the lower Mississippi Valley, the Great Lakes, and across parts of the southeast. Drought conditions intensified across parts of the west as well as in the central and southern plains. And outside of the contiguous U.S., we see that the drought extent lessened overall across Hawaii as a whole, but did intensify in the northwest portion of the Big Island. For more information on the current state of the U.S. drought, I will turn this presentation over to Jill Cazola.
Thank you, Karen. I'm going to talk just about my main points that appear on slide 7. The drought things that I'd like to discuss are that the West is facing yet another year of drought, kind of riffing off of what Karen just mentioned. I'd like to zoom in and talk about the record-breaking dryness we've observed in California, as well as to discuss the critically low reservoirs in the Colorado River system, and finish by just mentioning that we anticipate the impacts of the drought to be on the order of billions of dollars, similar to the last couple of years. So let's move on to slide 8. I want to just illustrate, using the drought monitor, three years of drought conditions that we've seen in much of the West. So this picture, this map, shows the drought monitor from April 2020. You'll see a lot less red than you're seeing for the current drought monitor. However, you still see in much of the northern half of California, Nevada, parts of the Pacific Northwest, as well as in the Colorado River Basin, moderate to severe drought depicted. Now, if we fast forward, moving on to slide 9 to April 2021, you can see a lot more of the severe and extreme drought kind of pervasively through the West. And as I think a lot of folks probably remember, those of us who live in the West, last year's drought was really remarkable in a lot of ways for the Colorado River Basin and for California. Now, moving on to slide 10, this is the same map that Karen just showed at the end of her presentation, the current drought monitor. And we can see a pattern that's really similar to what we saw last year, that there's kind of pervasive drought across the West, although we've had some lessening of intensity in Arizona and the Colorado River Basin. You still have many areas of severe and extreme drought, especially in much of California, as well as Central and Eastern Oregon. The bottom line is that many places in the West have actually been experiencing drought for 3 years, that we really haven't had a recovery from the drought conditions that got kicked off in 2021 or in 2020. Moving on to slide 11, colloquially, you may have heard about observing a dry January. Well, California has taken that to a new level by observing a dry January, February, and March. And this graph shows the January, February, March, that total precipitation in that California has gotten all the way back to when our records began in 1895. And you can see conditions bouncing around from year to year. But what I want to draw attention to, and we can move on to slide 12, are the last 3 years. And you can see how incredibly dry it's been. So this year, January through March, was the driest on record, with the total state precipitation only at 1.66 inches. And the average for the last 30 years is somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 inches. So that's only been 15% of what we'd call the normal. For last year, for 2021, it was only 60% of that average. And for 2022, it was only 48%. So we've really had 3 years in a row where we've gotten very little precipitation. And this is a time of year that's very important for California and a lot of the West Coast to get its rain and snow, that this 11 inches is roughly about half of what you'd expect over the course of the year. So this is when a lot of that water is supposed to arrive. Moving on to slide 13, I've got a few pictures from the Colorado River Basin, and these are from Lake Powell, one of the largest reservoirs actually in the continent. And you can see at left, this is March 2021, where the kayakers are trying to get in to the lake is quite a bit lower than where kind of the ramp ends. And then the situation getting even far worse as we get to the end of 2021. And I've tried to line up the pictures a little bit here so you can see how much lower the lake has been. The point here is to show the impact of the drought, and for the case of the Colorado River Basin, it's not just been 3 years, it's really been more on the order of 20 years that lake levels have been dropping, and that kind of the what we take out of these big reservoirs has exceeded what is being put back in from melting snow and from rainfall. Now moving on to slide 14, my last slide. So what does this all mean? What do we anticipate the impacts of the drought to be? Well, many of the water managers in the West have already announced that they won't be able to provide full allocations to many water users. So a lot of farmers and ranchers may not get the water that they would typically receive from the Colorado River system or in the state of California. And that has implications for how much electricity we can produce from hydropower, from obviously those growers and ranchers who produce our food, has impacts on fish populations, and it can also contribute to fire risk across the West as we have kind of very dry soils and a lot of dry vegetation that can act as fuel. If we look back at kind of the cost of impacts the last 2 years, the drought in the West has made NOAA's list of billion-dollar impacts. And I would anticipate that 2022 will probably be in the same neighborhood, and that we would have billions of dollars of impact. So with that, I'll conclude and turn things over to Scott Handel for kind of a look ahead for the next couple of months.
Thank you, Joe, and good morning, everyone. This is Scott Handel, meteorologist with the National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center. I'm going to start off by bringing your attention to slide 15 of the presentation with the current observations and forecasts for the El Nino Southern Oscillation. The figure on the left shows the most recent monthly average sea surface temperature anomalies for the tropical Pacific. The blue shading represents areas where sea surface temperatures are below normal, and the orange and red areas correspond to areas where sea surface temperatures are above normal. The horizontal black line in the center of the graph represents the equator, and the vertical black line represents the dateline. As you can see, there's a lot of blue in the map near the equator, indicating that on average, tropical Pacific sea surface temperatures are currently below normal. Sea surface temperatures in what's called the Niño 3.4 region of the tropical Pacific are roughly 0.9 degrees Celsius below normal, which puts us firmly in La Niña territory, which starts when sea surface temperatures fall to 0.5 degrees Celsius below normal. Looking to the future, the figure on the right represents the percent chance of La Niña, depicted by the blue bars, El Nino represented by the red bars, and neutral represented by the gray bars for each three-month period all the way out to the end of 2022. This figure indicates that there's a greater than a 50% chance of La Niña continuing through the remainder of 2022. Conversely, the chance for El Nino is very small, with less than a 10% chance of occurring through the end of the year. Now, moving from the tropics to closer to home, I'd like to draw your attention to slide 16, which represents our monthly outlooks for the month of May. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the month will be below or above normal. The red and orange shading on the map to the left indicates areas where above normal temperatures are the most likely outcome, while the blue shading indicates areas where below normal temperatures are most likely. Looking at the map on the left, one of the first things that stand out is there's a lot of red and orange on the map in the southern part of the contiguous United States and western Alaska, indicating areas that are favored to have above normal temperatures. The greatest confidence exists for the southern high plains, indicated by the darkest shade of red, where probabilities of above normal temperatures exceed 60%. Conversely, much of the northern plains and Great Lakes are shaded in blue, indicating areas where below normal temperatures are most likely. This anticipated pattern is due to a variety of factors, such as below normal soil moisture in the central and southern plains and the west, which would tend to favor heat, and increased snow cover in parts of the northern plains, which would tend to favor cold. Another factor is that the Arctic Oscillation is forecast to be in the negative phase during early May, potentially allowing colder air to spill into the northern contiguous United States. Looking at precipitation in the figure on the right, the areas of green on the map indicate regions where the total precipitation is favored to be above normal for May, and the brown areas represent regions where below normal precipitation is the most likely scenario. In general, much of the eastern United States is favored to be wet, due in part to what is known as a blocking pattern in the North Atlantic, which would tend to send the storm track further to the south than usual across eastern North America, increasing precipitation chances. The flip side to this is that the storm track is forecast to be further north than usual over western North America, which together with below normal soil moisture would favor below normal precipitation for much of the central and western contiguous United States. Forecast models favor above normal precipitation for southern Alaska and parts of the northern high plains, consistent with this more northerly storm track. Now, looking further ahead to the three-month period from May, June, and July, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 17. During this period, above-normal temperatures are favored to dominate much of the country. This is especially true for the central and southern Rockies, eastern Great Basin, and the central and southern High Plains, represented by the darker shades of reds in the image on the left, where forecast model output, low-normal soil moisture, and recent trends all point to the elevated potential for increased late spring and early summer heat. Probabilities of above-normal temperatures exceed 60% for these areas. The Northeast and Mid-Atlantic are also areas where confidence is relatively high for warmer-than-normal conditions, as recent trends and forecast model output point toward above-normal temperatures. Forecast confidence is lower for the Great Lakes and Upper Mississippi Valley, where a potential cool May may be offset by a warmer pattern in June and July. Confidence is also low along the immediate West Coast and for most of Alaska, with only the slightest of tilts in favor of above-normal temperatures for parts of eastern and northern mainland Alaska. Along with below-normal soil moisture content and the potential for increased heat, below-normal precipitation is favored for the central plains, the southern high plains, and the northwestern contiguous United States, represented by the areas of brown shading in the image on the right. Dryness in the plains tends to correspond to a wetter pattern for the southwest monsoon. This, in combination with increased heat forecast across the west, may dry out increased moisture to the southwest. For these reasons, we are favoring an enhanced early monsoon season for parts of the southwest in the area shaded in green. Increased chances for above normal precipitation is also indicated for the Ohio Valley to the Mid-Atlantic, as well as for parts of the eastern Gulf Coast region, consistent with recent trends. Confidence is low for Alaska, but forecast models are tilting wet for much of the western coast of the mainland, and recent trends support a slight tilt toward wet for parts of the eastern mainland. Now, wrapping things up with the drought outlook, I would like to bring your attention to slide 18. The brown areas on the map indicate where drought is currently ongoing and expected to continue. This includes most of the western United States, the central and southern plains, parts of Puerto Rico, and the lower Hawaiian Islands. Additionally, with a dry pattern favored for much of the central and northwestern contiguous United States, drought development is likely for the western corn belts, parts of the Rockies, and parts of the southern plains, in these areas represented by the yellow shading. On the flip side, drought improvement or removal is likely for parts of the southwest monsoon region, the northern high plains, the coastal southeast, and small areas of the central Appalachians, northern Maine, as well as the island of Oahu in Hawaii, consistent with the monthly and seasonal outlooks. That's it from the climate prediction. Back to you, John.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. And Kelly, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then please queue up the first question?
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone and record your name. If you would like to withdraw a question, you can press star 2. And again, to ask a question, press star 1. And for our first question, we have Seth Borenstein from the Associated Press. Seth, your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. I guess this is mostly for Joe with a follow-up question for Karen. Joe, you gave us the precipitation numbers. In terms of the overall condition, which includes soil moisture levels and plant moisture, basically wildfire season issues. If we look at this, I mean, a year ago at this time, all sorts of experts were saying this is going to be the worst, the conditions were the driest in terms of not just moisture, but what's in the soil and the plants were the driest on record. Is it fair to say that the soil moisture and the plant moisture right now are even drier than last year? So I'm wondering, in terms of the conditions going into fire season, are we worse than a year ago, which was one of the worst on record? And Karen, you know this was coming, I'm sure, is how much of what we're seeing in terms of this this dry situation is human-caused climate change, and how much is natural variations by things like La Nina and the AO?
Hi, this is Joe Casola. Thank you for the question. So at least for right now, a lot of the soil moisture and I think fuel moisture condition is not great, but we're lucky in the sense that this is the time when we're melting snow. And parts of California actually just got a little bit of snow in the last couple of weeks. So I look at least right this second as we've gotten a little bit of a respite in terms of that moisture arriving for kicking off fire season. So conditions, I think, are not great. But I think we may have delayed, maybe our kickoff to fire season by a week or so in California. I think the thing to watch now is what do the temperatures look like into the spring and early summer. And I think for me, one of the big concerns is the map that Scott showed, where, we anticipate a lot of the West to have a good chance to be warmer than average. And I think that's the thing that we'll be watching to see how rapidly things may be drying out and whether, that kind of elevates our fire risk going into what I'd say is the traditional fire season, although fire season can now, I think, really last 12 months. And Karen, I don't know if you wanted to tackle the climate change question.
Yeah, Joe, this is Karen Gleason at NCEI. I know Joe mentioned, that the current drought's been going on for a good part of the last 3 years. But when you take a look at even the past decade or longer, we know that the drought has been ebbing and flowing with various levels of intensity for some time now. So certainly, researchers have their eyes on the West, and there is quite a bit of research that's ongoing that does suggest that, climate change and global warming is enhancing excessive dry periods, as well as, short-term, heavy precipitation events, so kind of both ends of the precipitation spectrum. And so research does, indicate and suggest and support the fact that, climate change and global warming is contributing to the severity and the extent and the duration of the drought in the western U.S. So that is something that, is being talked about amongst the scientific community and is still in ongoing research.
Thank you.
Our next question is going to come from Drew Kahn of the Atlantic Journal-Constitution. Drew, your line is open.
Yeah, hi there. This is Drew with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. This is probably a question for Scott around La Nina and the increased odds that it will continue to persist. We've been in La Nina for a while now. Is this current event, exceptionally long, or is it pretty normal in that regard? And then second part of that question, if the projections hold up and we do stay in La Nina later in the year, what does that mean for the upcoming hurricane season as it relates to Georgia and other parts of the Southeast? Does that increase the odds of a more active hurricane season?
Yeah, those are good questions. Thank you for the question. In terms of whether this is unusual or not, yes, this is you know, a longer consecutive events than normal, but it's not unheard of. I mean, we've had cases in the past where we've had what's called double dip La Niñas, where La Niñas happened 2 years in a row, or even 3 years in a row. But it's not unheard of, but it is longer than usual as far as the number of consecutive years. The second question, as far as how it will affect the hurricane season, well, our official hurricane outlook will be issued next month. But that being said, one of the things that's just as important as being the favored La Nina is that the chance of El Nino is exceptionally low. Typically when you have a La Nina, that typically favors increased tropical activity in the tropical Atlantic, which by itself would favor a more active season. But there's also a lot of other factors that are important in whether or not the hurricane season will be above normal or below normal. And those factors will be discussed in more detail when the hurricane outlook is released next month.
There are currently no other questions in the queue.
All right. Thanks so much, Kelly. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up this call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and everyone else for participating in this call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a few upcoming releases and events. First of all, the release of the April 2022 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for May 9th. The release of the April 2022 Global Climate Report is scheduled for May 13th. And the next monthly media climate call is scheduled for May 19th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please feel free to email me, John Bateman. My contact information is available at the top of the Media Advisory. Thanks so much.
That concludes today's call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.